Okay, so we're going to start the last session of the day. There will be two talks, one by Louis Taillefer and one by André-Marie Tremblay. And without further comments, I leave the floor to Louis.
Merci, merci Antoine. Merci à tous d'être là. So, in my talk, I will focus on nematicity, and in particular, in defining the onset temperature for nematicity in the phase diagram of YBCO. This is the work, this is a collaboration between our group at Sherbrooke in Canada and the group of Doug Bond at UBC in Vancouver, also in Canada, who provided single crystals of YBCO, in fact, have been providing crystals to us for 25 years. So this work was led by two of my PhD students, who are both here, Olivier Sirchoignard and Gaël Grissonange. You will see that the onset of nematicity turns out to connect the four fundamental phases of cuprate superconductors. Superconductivity, and a fundamental question here is why a dome of superconductivity? The pseudo-gap, and the real question here is, what is it? Charge order, as we've seen, also forms a dome, whether you look at the onset of correlations or onset of order. And a fundamental question is, why? Why does it form a dome, and why does it form a dome at 12%? And finally, where does nematicity come from? So let me go back really to a simple, basic measurement. DC resistivity along the A-axis versus temperature, zero field, TC of 60K or so. This is data from Ando et al. 10 years ago. What you find in underdoped YBCO at 10% doping or so is an S-shaped resistivity curve. And that's true in mercury, that's true in bismuth 2201. As pointed out by Ando, the only sharply defined characteristic temperature for this curve is its inflection point. He then studied this systematically as a function of doping and produced a curvature map of the resistivity. This is negative curvature up to the inflection point. This is positive curvature. So you see this on this color plot here, where blue is negative, red is positive. So what you find is that the inflection point lies at the boundary between these two curvature fields, where the white line is. So this is a central, robust, real line in the phase diagram. So the question is, what is the significance of this line? So let's look now at another study, really a seminal study by Ando, of what we call nematicity, which he didn't call then, but, and it's a measure of the in-plane anisotropy, so A versus B, in these orthorhombic D-twin single crystals. And what he plots in this color plot is the magnitude of the ratio rho A over rho B. We know very well that at a high doping, the chains contribute to this anisotropy. But as you decrease the doping, what he showed was that this goes away, but then something else happens. And that something else actually is inverse. Instead of decreasing with decreasing temperature, increases with decreasing temperature. So you see these upturns in the ratio rho A over rho B. So let's try to identify the onset of these upturns. So I'm reproducing data from Ando at two dopings, so let's look at 8%, for example, around here. And you see it decreases. This is a chain-like effect, if you like. And then it starts to increase. So if we locate, identify, call this onset temperature T nem for nematic, we can locate it on the phase diagram. So what you find, surprisingly, Ando himself had not noticed this, but it's an inevitable thing in the sense that the upturn in rho A over rho B is caused by the upturn in rho A, which is nothing but the inflection point. So these are not accidentally on top of each other, they're necessarily on top of each other. What we did is to turn to a different transport measurements to confirm these results, to be sure that this is a robust feature. So we measured the Nernst coefficient, which is a thermoelectric property that you can direct also along A and B by sending a thermal current in two directions. And we look at the difference as a function of temperature. And what you find for an 8.5% sample is a small negative anisotropy that grows into a large positive anisotropy. So a qualitative change and a quantitative change, an order of magnitude increase. And zooming on the onset of this upturn allows you, right from the raw data, to pinpoint an onset temperature which falls exactly on the same line. So this separate measurement really confirms the onset of nematicity as being on this line. Now what we were able to do is extend the line to higher doping. So we did both resistivity and Nernst, and at 11% we still see an upturn in the resistivity located at this point here. But at 12% we see nothing, no trace of an upturn. Interestingly, 12% is precisely where this red region in Ando's curvature map ends. So in other words, nematicity is bounds this red region here and really ends at 12%. We can do that. We can look at the Nernst coefficient at 11%, again, a clear onset. This is the square over here. So the Nernst data agree very well with the resistivity anisotropy. Now, for those of you who are familiar with her prior work published in 2010, you might be puzzled and say, okay, well, that seems to be different from what we had published previously. So let me remind you of what we said earlier. In fact, the take-home message is that this inflection line is a nematic line. So this is our previously published anisotropy of the Nernst coefficient. So I'm plotting the same quantity versus temperature, now at 12% doping, and there's a clear, large rise in the anisotropy. Now, where's the onset of this rise? You might say, well, by eye, it's roughly there. You know, it's a rounded thing. In fact, if you zoom at the 1% level, this is 0.04, this is 4. So if you really zoom here, the onset would be around 200. So it's there. The pseudo-gap temperature is a loosely defined thing. From resistivity, from Ando's resistivity map, you would put it roughly there, but within error bars, it's probably the same temperature. Now, where does that come from at this particular doping, where we don't see it in the resistivity? So let me try to convince you that that particular anisotropy is, in fact, intimately related with charge order. So here I'm reproducing data by Yuan Chang, who showed it in his talk. This is actually in 15 Tesla at 12%, exactly the same doping, exactly the same field. And what we see is a rise, a smooth rise in the X-ray signal. And you can superimpose on that the Nernst anisotropy. So I think what's clear from this comparison is that they go hand in hand. So the anisotropy in the Nernst at 12% doping just tracks the CDW amplitude. So the picture that we have actually now is that the prior study, which was limited to dopings at 12 and above, actually tracks the charge density wave temperature. We said at the time that it tracked T star, but as you can see, these are very close on this side. But as you go under dope, and we've gone down to below 8%, it's very, very clear that this nematicity here is well below the T star, and it's definitely not correlated with TCDW. So it's a tale of two nematicities, one associated with this line and one associated with charge density wave order. And the separation in the Nernst is really seen at 12%. Okay. Another interesting feature of the line that we've just identified is its relation to the pseudo-gap energy. So I'm not talking about pseudo-gap temperature, but energy, as obtained, for example, by elaborate analysis, or simple but extensive analyses of data by Talon and Lorem over many years, and this is a review article to sum up. So looking at different properties like resistivity and NMR, heat capacity and susceptibility on YBCO, and ARPES on BISCO, they come up with a single gap, which they call the pseudo gap, that changes with temperature, with doping in this way. So this you fit this with this particular line, this green line. So this is taken straight from their paper. We can compare that, a line expressed in Kelvin, with our kinematic line. Okay? So if I divide by 2.4, I find essentially perfect scaling between the pneumatic onset and the pseudogap energy. So we have this equation valid for all the dopings that we've been able to measure. And so that immediately suggests an intimate connection between this particular pneumaticity and the pseudogap energy.
Where does this start rank up from in
this case? This is from the Andor curvature map. So the scaling would not work for T star defined from resistivity. Interestingly, we can compare with Seamus's data that he showed earlier from this 2014 paper, where so the comparison is that we are observing a scaling of energy, pseudogap energy, and as a function of temperature, and pneumaticity as a function of temperature. What they're doing is studying essentially T equals zero correlation as a function of doping. And what they find is that the pneumaticity goes where the pseudo gap goes. So there's a consistency between these studies on bismuth 2212 and these studies, transport studies on YBCO. Okay. I might mention I just flashed this for those who are interested. There's this onset of the Kerr signal. We haven't talked about this. I'm not sure that I understand where this comes from, but within error bars, it's probably on the same line. Okay, so what is the connection then between this pneumatic line and the charge density wave dome? So we've seen both from Marc-Henri Julien, in fact, he didn't emphasize this so much, but his observations also produce a dome centered at 12%. So if you want to argue that this is one type of density wave order, and this is quite a separate type of density wave order, you'd have to answer why they happen to both peak at the same place. And what we observe, simply an empirical observation, is that the pneumatic line ends at 12%. So it ends at the point where both of these peak. This is suggestive of a correlation, perhaps. Okay, so this is another take-home message, is that the pneumatic line, this particular pneumatic line, ends where the dome of charge order peaks. Now, I'd like to bring in a second recent paper that was just posted this month. Again, work led by Olivier Sirchoignard, but really starting many years ago by David Leboeuf when he was a PhD student in my group. And that's the study of the effect of pressure on YBCO. So we just do resistivity measurements under pressure. And what we observe is that at several dopings, I'm showing one here, but this is true at several dopings. In fact, at all the dopings we looked at, the shape of the resistivity curve is independent of pressure. In other words, whether you want to identify some T star or whether you want to identify the inflection point, this part of the curve doesn't change. TC changes, and there may be changes below the ordering charge ordering temperature, but the downturn, which is associated with the pseudo gap, does not change. So that's robust against pressure, and TC is enhanced by pressure. That's, of course, very well known. So let's look at the enhancement of TC with pressure, and this is at three dopings in oxygen-ordered YBCO that was done in our lab. And the question is, in fact, why is TC enhanced by pressure? It's a remarkable thing that there's really zillions of studies of pressure-induced enhancement of TC or decrease of TC, and it's not never really been sorted out. And of course, you may know that the record highest TC in cuprates is obtained by applying pressure. So it's important to understand why does pressure increase TC. In fact, I would like to propose that this is because pressure tunes the competition with charge order. You increase TC, not directly, but simply because you suppress charge order. So let's look at the DTC-DP, the slope of this line, as a function of doping. These are our three points, and they match perfectly with a whole collection of published data. So one thing to note is that at high doping, above 16% or so, there's essentially no dependence of TC on pressure. So pressure does not change superconductivity directly, but it massively changes it, in particular peaked at 1/8, at the 12%. And this we can correlate with the way field tunes TC. And what we find is a beautiful similarity between the effect of field on superconductivity and the effect of pressure on superconductivity. And we know very well why field produces this peak at 12%. That's because field tunes the competition between charge order and superconductivity. That was beautifully shown by Johan in his X-ray studies. So we understand why that peaks, the red data peaks, and so therefore we infer that the effect of pressure is the same, is to tune competition, but now from the other side. So pressure does not directly affect superconductivity. It suppresses charge order, and for that reason, superconductivity increases. That implies that if you apply enough pressure, you can remove charge order. And so let's look at two pressures. If you apply 2 gigapascal, you see that nothing happens on this side, nothing much happens on this side, but you're just basically slowly getting rid of the dip, which we attribute to charge order, which, by the way, exists precisely between this point and this one. If you apply enough and you extrapolate data, that's existing data published in the literature, you obtain a smooth dome, shown in red, that now peaks not at 16%, but at 13% or so, but also does not have a dip. There is, by the way, an extra effect where this foot moves in, as it turns out, suggestive of an enhanced competition on the left. Okay, I'd like to mention another piece of recent experimental data from our group, and that's the study of the effect of pressure on Fermi surface reconstruction by charge order in NDLSCO. So that connects nicely with the talk that Johan gave on his ARPES data on NDLSCO. So the cartoon here shows you the same sort of phase diagram where there's charge order here, and there's a critical point at 24%, and you look at the effect of decreasing doping to 20%. These are the same dopings that Johan had studied. So at 24%, everything is conventional. We have exactly the value expected for the Hall effect for a single large hole-like cylinder with P, 1 plus P carriers. So this is exactly 1 over 1 plus P. So this works fine. If we now move into 20%, this is all published in this paper here, there's a clear departure. There's a modification of the Fermi surface, giving rise to an upturn in the Hall coefficient. And that coincides with the onset of charge order, as detected by NMR. Okay, so we reconstruct the Fermi surface by charge order at 20%. Now, the effect of pressure on this is that nothing happens to this guy, but you dramatically suppress the Fermi surface reconstruction at 20%. So applying pressure brings this down. So these are, on the scale of things, very small pressures. So here, again, it appears that pressure destabilizes charge order, now seen in its signature on the Fermi surface reconstruction and the Hall coefficient. Okay, so let's look now at the dome of superconductivity once we've removed charge order from the picture. So we go to 15 gigapascal, and we have a dome. So in a sense, this is simpler. This is a picture without the inconvenience of a competing charge order phase. It's at 105 or so, it peaks at 105, but it's still a dome. And so the fundamental question is back again, why a dome? You know, what is causing this dome? And so I'm just pointing out that our pneumatic line hits that dome right at the top. This kind of phase diagram is very suggestive. If you're familiar with organics, with heavy fermions, with nictides, it's very suggestive of a competing phase on the left causing a dome of superconductivity. So that's another take-home message. So let me summarize then the results that I've presented. We have a line that's clearly identified here, way back from Ando's data, quite uncorrelated with this line, except perhaps that it hits it at its peak. And that line is a nematic line. It's the onset of nematicity. So we have this result. We have that it's, it appears to be intimately linked to the pseudo-gap energy. And it has these topological features of hitting the domes of both charge order and superconductivity at their peak. So let's now turn to possible scenarios for where the nematicity might come from. So, and I'll suggest two. So the first scenario, not sure what to call it, let's call it spin density wave scenario, is in the following spirit. The spirit is that this is charge order seen by NMR, and this is really just a precursor of that order, and it's a nematic phase. So this is nematic, charge nematic, and this is charge smectic, if you want to use those terms. Similarly, it's known that there is spin density wave order at low temperatures on the low doping side, and this then would be spin nematic, and this is a spin smectic. So this kind of language was really introduced by Steve Kivelson and Eduardo Fradkin and Vic Emery way back, and they proposed that you can stabilize at high temperature a nematic phase as a precursor of this underlying smectic phase. So in YBCO, it may be then that we have this kind of picture, but somehow separate for spin and charge. Okay. This I already showed as evidence of spin density wave nematicity, but in fact, there is other data to support that assignment, and some was mentioned by Marc-Henri. So let me just show it again. He's seeing at high temperatures of order, the charge ordering temperature, a clear difference between an oxygen atom along X and an oxygen atom along Y. So he has this phase diagram where these two red points are two dopings that he studied, and within error bars, it coincides with the X-ray evidence. So in other words, in this scenario, we would say that what the X-ray sees is literally charge-related nematicity. And that's consistent with Marc-Henri's conclusion. Nematicity, of course, seems to show up in the data of the chimer group, for example, and Johan also talked about this. You get pronounced differences in the peaks along A and B. And finally, Andrea argued again that there was anisotropy related to the charge order in YBCO. So all of this makes a strong case for charge-related nematicity. And now spin-related nematicity, there's also strong evidence for. In this paper by Hinkoff and collaborators in the group of chimer several years ago, Mathieu showed this particular picture, but he didn't show this one. This is along A star, and this is along B star. The splitting here occurs only in one direction. And that happens below a certain temperature. So this is A axis and this is B axis. And so this spin nematicity occurs at a temperature that's very comparable to the TNEM line that we draw. So this is from one of their review papers. And if you put those points, you can see that the onset of the resistivity upturn and the onset of the spin incommensurability upturn are quite close. Okay, so in summary then, in this scenario, superconductivity would probably be a dome because it competes with the spin phase on the left. The pseudo gap would be related to a nematic, spin nematic phase. The reason why you have a dome of charge order, again, is because of competition with the spin phases on the left. And of course, this is a scenario for where the nematicity comes from. The second scenario is what I would call a Mott scenario, and it will be touched on and elaborated on by the next speaker, André-Marie Tremblay, so I won't go through it, but I would say that from my perspective, it would really start from this observation that this line is actually a pseudo-gap, a characteristic pseudo-gap temperature scale. So how does one explain that? How can one relate the pseudo-gap, a pseudo-gap, with nematicity? And in the calculations, the numerical calculations that André-Marie and others have done, that actually comes out in the sense that, not in the sense of a broken rotational symmetry, but in the sense that as you enter the pseudo-gap phase, you become extremely sensitive to orthorhombic distortions. The system just acquires a very large pneumatic susceptibility. So in a YBCO crystal that has orthorhombic distortion, the transport will end up being very anisotropic. So this is the analog of the kind of experiments that Ian Fisher does in the nictides. If you could then apply to tetragonal cuprate, apply uniaxial strain, you would see these huge pneumatic responses boosted by the pseudo-gap phase on this. And that then could explain why this seems to track so well the pseudo-gap energy. So let me end there. Thank you very much.